Debate grows over the future of Georgia's Cumberland Island. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Subscribe to our podcast through the WJCT app or stream the audio of this program right now live on our Facebook page. Just ahead, we'll take your calls as we hear about the drive to protect Cumberland Island National Seashore from development. Where do you stand on that? Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, helping young men and women on the First Coast learn money matters. We'll tell you about a special program and how you can support a good cause this week just by going out to eat. We'll tell you where. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, an update to a story we've been following, a controversial proposal to develop part of Cumberland Island National Seashore. Wild horses roam free on the famed Georgia Island, once settled by the Carnegie family. The island's been part of the National Park Service since the 1970s. It's Georgia's largest and southernmost barrier island, wild and unspoiled, accessible only by ferry. It's also known as the place where John F. Kennedy Jr. married Carolyn Bessette at the small First African Baptist Church on the island's north end back in 1996. Now, though, controversy. Some descendants and associates of the island's wealthy owners want to build up to 10 homes on an 88-acre piece of central Cumberland near the island's popular campground. Environmental groups and Camden County, Georgia residents are railing against the idea since Cumberland is a federally designated seashore preserve. This morning we speak with one of them. He's Camden County resident and former legislator Bill Bruce. Bruce filed an initial appeal over this matter, one of two that is pending, and he joins us now in studio with the latest on what's happening on Cumberland Island. Bill Bruce, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And here's our question to callers. What do you think about this proposal to have limited development on Cumberland Island National Seashore in Georgia? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on our Facebook page. So you filed as a concerned citizen, Bill, an initial appeal of the Camden County Planning Commission's approval of a zoning variance that would permit subdivision of the land in question and some limited building on Cumberland Island. Why did you stand up to oppose this?
First, just a moment's worth of background. The Cumberland Island National Seashore, which is a national park, was created and established in 1972. But at that time, the property owners who had the property and were transferring it to the National Park Service reserved about 1,000 acres. Proposal that's pending right now has to do, as you mentioned, with an 88-acre tract that is owned by the Candler family, which are Coca-Cola and
the Coca-Cola heirs up in Atlanta.
That's right,
in Atlanta. They have property on the island.
They have property on the island, and they've been they and their family have been very good stewards of the island. But they now have proposed a subdivision of their 88 acres so as to have a 10 potential residences there, which they call a family compound. One problem that has arisen that in addition to that, now the other property owners have similar interests, and they have proposed now a complete rezoning of the private property so as to permit limited residential development on all of it. And that concerns us very
much. You see that as a slippery slope to ruining the character of Cumberland Island?
I do. It's a jewel. It was a wonderful gift by an earlier generation to us, and it's one that we would hope to pass on to our children and grandchildren. It's a place of solitude and peace. It's a place where there are wild animals roam, including wild horses. Also alligators and many other types of animals. And it's something that is enjoyed by not only people here in Georgia and the North Florida area, but all over the United States and internationally.
People do come from all over the world to Cumberland Island. to see the wild horses, to see the completely undeveloped Barrier Island and that beach with its wild sand dunes. They haven't changed in thousands of years.
That's correct.
The descendants of the Carnegies and the Candlers are the private wealthy landowners on this island. They've kept mum about this. They haven't really commented. What about the argument, though, that surely they're going to present to the Camden County Commission, which is that this is our land, we own it. Even though it is on a national park, limited development wouldn't affect the overall nature of the experience on Cumberland.
Well, and that's a strong argument. The problem is this is not ordinary land. This is land that is mostly a national seashore, and it's been that for 45 years. The present landowners who have had made no effort during the last 45 years to seek further development now want to do something which is contrary to what they live with, what their forebears bequeathed to us, and which will generate not only the noise and chaos of construction. Think about it. It will generate a need for trash disposal, for septic systems, for additional roads probably, for more vehicles. And here's the icing on the cake. The beaches are under the jurisdiction of the Georgia Department of National Resources, not the National Park Service. They grant permits, in particular if conditions are met, for driving on the beaches. Some of those permits are criteria are very understandable. Somebody's got a scientific project and they need to get down to the beach. But listen to this one. I'm applying to general authorization because I own or have an interest in real property on the island in question, or am the spouse, parent, child, grandchild, or other lineal descendant or their spouse of such an individual. Which means if we end up with 10 additional houses, or maybe more than that, if the rezoning effort is successful to permit that sort of development on all the privately owned property, you're talking about the possibility of hundreds of permits.
You think this
for people
is
to drive
the
on
camel's
the beach.
Nose under the tent for that?
The camel's
okay,
more than his nose.
All right. Now, let me ask you as well. There are houses and homeowners on the island. Not a lot, but there are a few homes already on the island. Don't they have an agreement with the National Park Service that eventually they cede their property back to the government?
Yeah, they. In addition to the privately owned land, which is owned outright, there are a number of parcels of land which have what we call retain rights. They expire at some point in the future. And you're right, there are several residences up on the northern end of the island that are in that particular situation.
And is this the only barrier island along the eastern seaboard that possesses these characteristics? No roads, no development. You can't even litter on the island. It's not accessible by a bridge. You take the ferry. It's pack in, pack out. You cannot leave anything on that island. If you're eating lunch on the island, those park rangers make sure that you pack your trash on into your cooler and you take it with you when you get back on that boat.
Everything that you want, you have to bring over with you. And you take everything off the island with you when you leave.
And the wild horses, of course, too. To my knowledge, it's the only place like that on the eastern seaboard. But I
don't
think
there's anything that can compare with it. You might say that some islands, like Sapelo Island, which is just north of that area, has some limitations on development. But the pristine preservation of this national treasure is, I think, one only in the world.
Well, is this an argument, though, Bill, that the Camden County Commissioners are open to hearing, or do you expect them to vote in favor of development?
Well, I wouldn't speculate as to what they'll vote on. Their planning commission, which they appoint, approve the initial application for a subdivision, whether or not that's an indication of the feeling of the county commissioners, we'll find out ultimately in some public hearings before that body. We hope very much that the county commissioners will take into consideration this particular treasure that we've got and do whatever it takes to preserve it.
All right, let's go to your calls about the controversy over proposed building on the Cumberland Island National Seashore. What do you think? It's and have you ever been there? What are your thoughts about the island? 549-2937. Carla is in St. Mary's, Georgia. Hey, Carla, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm calling because I work at the local Publix in the deli, and sometimes we're making sandwiches, and I can tell you that at least 3 out of my 4 days that I work there, I make a sub for somebody coming from Canada, from England, from Atlanta, from local and really, really far places going to Cumberland Island. And something they like to talk about a lot is how pristine and untouched it is. They really love it, and I even helped a customer not long ago that was there on spring break, and she was talking about how everything was full and they couldn't find a place to camp, so they ended up making a deal with somebody local to stay at their property in the island. So I think further development would hurt that, because especially if it's wealthy development, it's not going to help the local economy as these smaller scale tourists do. Coming in and out every year and getting their stuff, getting their lunch ready to go to the island. Honestly, I think they should leave it as it is, especially given that there are so few places in this country left untouched. And that Bear Island is going to prove to be a great asset when the ocean starts coming back into the land. So I just think it would be both economically and environmentally sensible to leave it as it is.
All right, Carla. Thanks for that. That's Carla in St. Mary's. The tourist trade in St. Mary's is largely driven by what she's talking about. But on the other hand, the landowners on this island, what about their argument that, look, this, we do own this property. I know I asked you this already, Bill, but we do own this property. This isn't a slippery slope. This will be limited. You're saying it's the rezoning request that concerns you more than what the landowners want to do on their little piece.
That's right. The overall rezoning could permit hundreds of houses, not just 10. The properties involved, and this is one of the problems, the ferry that goes over, the pedestrian ferry, the place where it discharges its passengers is just a quarter of a mile from the Candler property. And I just see the really a destruction of the whole concept of this national park, this national treasure, if that development takes place. I know the private property owners say they have rights, they have the wealth and the prominence, perhaps to have their way with it. But their forebears gave us something wonderful. We would hope that they would follow suit and leave that something wonderful for the people coming after them.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, as we discuss the fate of Cumberland Island. Larry is in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Larry. Thanks for holding.
Hey,
good morning.
Yes, good morning. I just want to say, as someone who's spent a lot of time on Cumberland, especially in the 70s and 80s, even there before the Park Service took over, anybody who has any doubts about whether they should do this or that should take a trip over there, because it is absolutely spectacular. It's the most pristine beaches that you've ever seen, giant oaks, tall pines, wild animals. It is just a treasure. And to start building homes over there would be a slippery slope. And like I said, for anybody who has any doubts, I beg them to take a trip and go and spend a little time. The history about Cumberland Island with the Carnegies is, I had the pleasure of meeting Mrs. Lucy and sitting down with her for a tea, and the history about the Carnegies and how the whole thing came about is fascinating. There's a place called the Chimneys where slaves, I don't know whether the Chimneys are still there. It's been 20 years since I've been there. But it is a spectacular place, and people need to keep it pristine.
Thanks, Larry.
I beg them to check it out first.
Thanks, Larry. He's certainly right about the history of how the Carnegies turned that island into their winter residence, and the ruins of their mansion still there. You can walk right through them.
Well, they had several mansions, that some of which are still standing, but the big one, Dungeness, is there in ruins and is a real attraction to the people coming over to the island.
Let's go to Tom in St. Mary's. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. A couple of points I'd like to make. One is the Chandler family bought this property in 1998, almost 20 years after it was declared a national seashore. At the time they bought it, they had no rights. There was no authorization to build private residences. So it's really not, in my mind, a question of private ownership and the rights of dealing with private property. They're trying to change the rules. And my concern is, and you can see photos of this on the Internet, they are so confident that our county commissioners are going to rezone that property for their benefit. They're already out there with spray paint cans marking areas where the building locations are going to be. And one of the locations is within 100 feet of a world-acclaimed campsite, Sea Camp. The tragedy, if this is allowed to pursue, is just difficult to describe. And I have no idea why our county commissioners, where the full authority to do right by the county, by the state, by the world, it lies with them. Why they're not listening to the public? Why they're moving forward with even considering rezoning for the purposes of allowing private...
Well, Tom, let me ask you, up in St. Mary's, is the community, how vocal is the opposition right now?
Well, I guess that all depends on your circle of friends. I mean, the circle that I'm involved in is very concerned, maybe not as vocal as we need to be. We're trying to ramp that up. The pushback that we get, and this is disturbing to me, the pushback from both the Park Service and from our elected officials is that this is a local issue. Well, I beg to differ. This is not only a national issue, it's a national park, but it's a world issue. It's a very unique piece of property. There aren't a lot of those around. And we, as a lady earlier in the show, relay to you, on a daily basis, there are travelers throughout the world that visit there and camp there. And now, to put in a $1 million-plus residence, and how many there'll be, who knows,
okay,
that is going to be at least 15 feet above the water level, you know, these $1 million Georgia mansions, that just distracts from the whole concept of the park.
Okay, thanks, Tom. And if you're just tuning in, lots of calls, emails, and tweets as we discuss controversy over proposed development on the Cumberland Island National Seashore. 1 second, Bill. Let me just get a few tweets on the air. Here's one from Matter of Mel. Camden County should do whatever it takes to prevent money-hungry developers from entering one of the few natural resources left. Kingsley tweets the show, the why not for Cumberland Island is pretty clear, but have we ever heard the why for development? I hope it's not just money. Here's another tweet. I went there as a kid. All I'm thinking is good luck with rising sea levels to people thinking it's a good idea to build there. Here's another tweet. I agree with the caller's outrage, but developers have money that line the politicians' pockets. Rob emails the show, there is no development that will not have long-term impact to the island, no matter how few there are. This is a slippery slope, and once we lose a national treasure like Cumberland, we will never get it back. Bill Bruce.
One thing that could help your listeners, Melissa, is there's a very good website, where the documents, pictures, various other information, the contact information for the county commissioners is available. And if you permit me, it's protectcumberlandislandnationalseashore.weebly, W-E-E-B-L-Y, weebly.com. That's Protect Cumberland Island National Seashore.weebly.com. And another good one is facebook.com/SaveCumberlandIsland.
Okay.
So if you want more material, there's lots of it available on the internet.
All right. Let's go now to Chris in Atlantic Beach. Hey, Chris, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. I observed that this is private property on Cumberland Island. And, of course, there are a lot of pieces of private property in national parks and national forests. As we know, it exists in the Ocala National Forest or Glacier National Park. My question is, what uses are permitted to these private landowners under the existing zoning?
Yeah, thanks for that. That's a good question as well. What does the current zoning state?
The current zoning is called conservation preservation. It permits uses primarily which are consistent with the mission of the National Park Service for Cumberland Island, which is Cumberland Island National Seashore maintains the primitive, undeveloped character of one of the largest and most ecologically diverse barrier islands on the Atlantic coast, while preserving scenic, scientific, and historical values and providing outstanding opportunities for outdoor recreation and solitude. The present zoning does not permit residential development.
And there are no roads on the island.
There are no paved roads on the island.
There are some dirt roads.
Yeah.
Yes. And really no vehicles to speak of.
Well,
there are a few there,
but the landowners are permitted to bring vehicles to the island.
How many landowners total? What about a few dozen?
Yeah, about a dozen probably total would be right, including the ones with retained rights.
Lots of calls from St. Mary's today. So glad to hear that everyone up there is listening up there on across the state line. Mike in St. Mary's. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, thanks so much. Now, I understand his point about, not wanting to expand it any further, but, I fish around Cumberland all the time, like up in Christmas Creek, down by the jetties, and we eat lunch and see the horses. And I think it's awesome. But as far as these guys' own property, getting it set up, if I had property out there, I would love to be able to subdivide it into a piece for my, kids and stuff and down the road. But I don't, as long as there's, very large restrictions on, how big your house is and things, which I'm sure there would be, I don't think I'd have a big problem with it.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks
for
the call.
All of us that have property know about zoning requirements. And zoning requirements apply to everybody equally. Right now, those zoning requirements say no residences, and that applies equally to all the private landowners on the island. I think that zoning requirement is not only reasonable, but it should be preserved.
Mario is in Clay County. Go ahead, Mario.
Oh, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
I am just astounded by, there's a feeling now that big money is able to do whatever it wants to do in this country, and I hope that the local residents make the noise that it takes to preserve something on a national level. I mean, who comes in and says we're going to have local zoning on a national treasure? That needs to be a federal level because it's a national park. It belongs to everybody. When I went up to see, sites up in Washington, D.C., everybody reminded me this is your land because this is a national park. So you're standing on your land. You're not standing on Pennsylvania land. This is your park. This is not a state park. This is a national park. And that brings a lot of pride. And I appreciate you being on the show and letting us know all about this.
Thanks, Mario. What's next, Bill? Will there be a lawsuit filed in this matter? When's the next public hearing?
Well, the next public hearing would be April 4th, and it would have to do with the original request by the Candlers for their property only. But now, with the study of a potential overall rezoning, it would appear that this hearing will be delayed, and then if there's zoning, it might preempt it completely, so there won't need to be a hearing on it. But right now, we're going to try to be prepared for whatever form the hearing takes before our county commission.
And will there be litigation over this? Will environmental groups file to stop the bulldozers from coming in?
There could be, but analyzing what is available as legal remedies, that just remains to be seen.
Well, we'll continue to follow it. In the meantime, we appreciate you making the drive down here to join us in studio. Thanks for being with us.
Your beautiful facilities here overlooking the river. It's a real treat to be here, Melissa.
It's wonderful to host you. Bill Bruce, St. Mary's resident and retired legislator, speaking out about the controversy over proposed development on Cumberland Island National Seashore. And much more still ahead later. You got to have a sense of humor to raise kids. We'll speak with the author of Science of Parenthood as she visits the area. Speaking of kids, up next, teaching teens some all-important money matters. We'll tell you about a new program. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
On the next Fresh Air, the untold story of DARPA, the Pentagon agency founded in 1958 that's focused on creating new defense technologies. Innovations that have come out of DARPA include the internet, communication satellites, drones, the driverless car, and the robot vacuum cleaner. But it's also spent billions on projects like missile shields that didn't work out. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
It's time. The WJCT T-shirt competition finalists have been chosen, and now it's up to you, the First Coast community, to pick the design from here. To vote, go to wjct.org/45years. Simply click on your favorite entry, and then click the green thumbs up button. It's that simple. Voting continues through March 31st at midnight. For more information, go to wjct.org/45years.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon, the best in classic and modern blues, as part of WJCT's After Hours, tonight at 11 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world, your music.
On the next Jazz Night in America, it's the 100th birthday of Billie Holiday. Cassandra Wilson brings her new project to the Kennedy Center, and pianist Barbara Carroll talks about the opportunities she had to perform with Lady Day.
And when she sang, the expression was outstanding, very often heartbreaking.
That's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, it's a vital new financial literacy program for teens in our area called Money Matters. Now, this program was created by the Boys and Girls Clubs of America in partnership with the Charles Schwab Foundation to provide financial education to help get teens on the path toward budgeting, saving, college, financial freedom. I wish I'd had a class like this when I was that age. Holly Tyrell of Legacy Trust Family Wealth Offices and Chris Spires of Montoya & Associates, together they teach Money Matters to teenage members of the Beaches Boys and Girls Clubs. And they join us now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning.
This is such an important program. Every teen in America should be taught financial literacy. Holly, let's begin with you. How does Money Matters work?
So we have about 18 teens that join us each week on Wednesdays at 4:30. And it is completely optional, which is the best part, because they keep showing back up. And
oh, that's good.
It
is. That's a good sign.
And each week we go over a different topic, whether it's about spending, using credit, saving and investing, thinking about college, and eventually we'll get to being your own boss.
Really? Oh, they're getting a lot in a short time. Chris Spires, I think you've been quoted already saying what I just said. I wish when I was growing up, someone had given me these lessons. What are some of the most important lessons that you're imparting to these kids about their money?
You know, what we're trying to do is give them a holistic view. And I think the things that we're touching on are real life situations. One of the exercises we did early on was budgeting for the prom.
Oh, very nice.
So
that's on their mind right now.
Yeah, yeah. And we have 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders that are in the program. And so we gave them a fixed amount of money and said, okay, if you're going to the prom, how are you going to spend it? And it was interesting, the answers and the
results.
What
were some of the answers you guys got?
Well, so the young men in the group decided to pay for their date's dinner.
Uh-huh.
And all the young ladies decided to have their dates pay for their own dinner.
Okay.
So that was kind of surprising.
They were all on this. Okay. Interesting. What else? And were they surprised at how much it cost to have fun at the prom?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. You know, when you put down everything that goes into that, you know, whether it's renting a tux, getting your nails done, getting your hair done, mm-hmm. You know, money for dinner. Do you go to a very expensive restaurant? Do you kind of go to a moderate, affordable restaurant? Do you get a limo?
Right.
You know, and things like that. And
it all adds up.
Yep.
And so the level of engagement you're seeing, that's got to be pretty gratifying, that they're really interested in this.
Absolutely. We thought maybe they might not come back the next week, and then they showed back up again. And we might incentivize them with cookies and treats at the end of each program, but I really do feel that they're each getting something each week from the program.
And young people do want to learn how to manage their money. It's only been recently that financial literacy even has become popular to teach teenagers. I had to learn through trial and error, and I made so many mistakes as a young person right out of college. I think a lot of people, when they first get out on their own, they really have no idea how to manage their money.
Absolutely.
So this is so important.
Right. So Chris and I both work in financial services, and we know that our clients need help, but if we could teach this at an earlier age, they would be so much better off.
So you're a few sessions into this. Do you have hopes, Chris, of expanding it to more teens?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Holly and I are part of the Beaches Boys and Girls Club, and there's 14 clubs here in Jacksonville. And so right now we're the only club that's sponsoring the program. And so what we hope to do is be able to take it to the other clubs and teach the other board members at those clubs how to put it on. Certainly reach more children in the greater Jacksonville area.
Now, the website is moneymattersmakeitcount.com, and you meet each Wednesday. This is going through May at the Beaches Boys and Girls Club on Seagate Avenue in Jacksonville Beach. Room for any more students?
Absolutely. And we are having an open house this Friday at 5:30, so parents and other people in the Beaches community can come out and check us out.
Very nice. It's moneymattersmakeitcount.com. Check it out. Holly Terrell of Legacy Trust Family Wealth Offices and Chris Spires of Montoya & Associates teach money matters for your kids. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. Doctors don't know everything, but computer algorithms can help them answer some big questions. Questions like, when are you going to die?
Machines can see the world and can see patients in ways that we cannot as doctors.
I'm Molly Wood, predicting death with data, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Jessica Palumbo. When WJCT first began broadcasting in 1972, a gallon of gas cost just 55 cents. Just as the price of gas has gone up over time, so have the costs of programming this station. But one thing hasn't changed. Listeners who give every year are still the most reliable source of support for this station. Become a sustainer by calling 904-353-9528 or go to WJCT.org.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, the website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at WJCT.org/Next Avenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part two, sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Collaborate and Give, a new program that helps you donate to a good cause just by going out to eat. This is the week to do it, too. Now, here with more, we welcome Matt Manick from Forking Amazing Restaurants. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. And Amy Pierce, she's Director of Development for the Jacksonville Humane Society. Hey, Amy.
Good morning.
This is all to benefit the Humane Society, but Matt, let's begin with you. Forking Amazing, which is like the best name for a restaurant group ever, it comprises Ovinte, Bistro X, and Il Desco, and it will soon be Cowford Chop House, too.
That's correct.
So what is Collaborate and Give happening around these three restaurants this week?
Yeah, so Collaborate and Give is a program that we just recently launched. We're partnering up with a local nonprofit each month. So the last Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of each month, we're going to donate 5% of all of our food sales to that charity. So it's pretty straightforward program. You don't have to come in with a flyer or coupon or say anything to your server. Just make a reservation, come in for dinner, and we're going to donate 5% of all of our sales.
All you have to do is go out to eat today or tomorrow at either Ovinte at the Town Center, Bistro X in San Marco, or Il Desco in Riverside. And some of what you spend will go toward the Jacksonville Humane Society. Amy Pierce with the Humane Society, this whole program is called Let's Build This Puppy. What's Let's Build This Puppy going to do?
So all the funds that are raised will help us to rebuild our shelter. It'll be 10 years ago in April that the shelter burnt down. A lot of people from Jacksonville remember that.
Oh, right. That was just horrible.
And so so we are finally rebuilding it, and we should open in July. And so all the funds raised will go toward that effort.
This is the shelter on Beach Boulevard.
Correct. Yep.
And you have the new animal hospital there, too.
We do. Yeah, the new shelter actually connects to the new animal hospital.
And how much has it cost to get this up and constructed?
The entire project is $15 million, and we've got a little over $9 million raised so far. So every dollar counts. So we're really grateful to be part of this collaboration.
Matt Manick, how much are you hoping to raise this week for the Humane Society through this dining initiative?
Absolutely. We're hoping to donate somewhere between $1,000 to $1,500.
Every little bit helps.
Absolutely.
Now, this isn't the first time you've done this either, is it?
No. Last month was actually our first month. We worked with the J Fund, so we were able to donate a little over $1,000 to the J Fund to help fight childhood cancer.
How do you pick your charities? What's the process? I'm sure someone listening right now will want to give you a call.
Absolutely. We have had a lot of people interested in the program since the launch. What we're actually doing is we're taking outside applications for it, as well as letting our staff nominate. So it's a great way to engage our staff and get the whole team involved and let them, you know, pick a charity.
This is happening today and tomorrow. It's Collaborate and Give through Forking Amazing Restaurants to benefit the Humane Society and their Let's Build This Puppy effort to get a new animal shelter up on the First Coast. Is this going to be part of the no-kill movement in Jacksonville, Amy, as well, to make Jacksonville a no-kill city for homeless pets?
Sure. So JHS, we partner closely with the City Shelter and First Coast No More Homeless Pets. And Jacksonville's actually been no-kill for 3 years now. So the new shelter will absolutely help us to sustain that and ensure that animals have a safe place to be.
I'm way behind.
No, that's okay.
I should have known that. But thank you for the update. Now, let me ask you, too, while I have you here, Matt, your construction is underway on Forking Amazing's newest eatery, the Cowford Chop House, right down the street from WJCT, where we're sitting on Bay Street, right as people come across the Main Street Bridge. When is Cowford Chop House going to open to the public?
That's a very popular question lately. while we don't have a firm opening date, if you haven't been downtown recently and seen the progress, you really should drive by, take a look at it. It's moving very, very quickly right now. And again, while we don't have a firm opening date, we are positive that we will be open late this summer.
Late this summer. So we're going to have a lot happening downtown this summer. The new amphitheater, new restaurant, yeah, all kinds of stuff is popping out all over the place.
Yeah, there are a lot of attention to downtown right now. You know, restaurants opening, the amphitheater, hotels going in. So a lot to make downtown popular now.
Okay, so collaborate and give this week. Dine out at Ovinte Bistro X or Il Desco either today or tomorrow and help support the Jacksonville Humane Society get their new animal shelter built. Amy Pierce with the Humane Society, Matt Manick of Forking Amazing, thanks so much for sharing this with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
In a moment, the author of Science of Parenthood as she visits Jacksonville. Keep listening.
Hamtramck, Michigan, a city of immigrants, these days mostly from Bangladesh and Yemen, so anti-Muslim attitudes hit hard.
There's times where you just gotta be the better person and the bigger person, you know, being of Middle Eastern descent. We have to be stronger and learn how to control our emotions.
A visit to predominantly Muslim Hamtramck, Michigan, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Catherine Burns, one of the hosts of the Moth Radio Hour, and I hope you'll join us here on 89.9 WJCT. With true personal stories told live without notes to standing room crowds around the world, Moth stories aren't part of the disposable daily information flow. They stick with you, and you'll even find yourself retelling them. Listen Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on 89.9 WJCT.
Hear what it's like to tour North Korea.
I could not even go to the bathroom without one of my handlers coming with me.
Or to live in the not-quite states of America.
In a lot of ways, they're sort of second-class citizens in terms of rights.
And the folks from Atlas Obscura recommend fun places to see on a great American road trip.
America has this kind of obsession of building enormous versions of giant things.
On the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Saturday mornings at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour. She's been named one of Today Parents' Funniest Parents of 2015. Longtime magazine writer Noreen Dworkin McDaniel is also the co-creator of one of the most popular sites on the web for parenting laughs. It's called Science of Parenthood. And her latest book is also called Science of Parenthood: Thoroughly Unscientific Explanations for Utterly Baffling Parenting Situations. Anyone with kids has been there. Now, Noreen will be at the Jewish Community Alliance Thursday night for a talk and a book signing. We have an hilarious preview from her on the phone right now as she joins the show. Noreen Dworkin McDaniel, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
So glad to have you on the show. Your book is getting lots of buzz and your website too. But for those who may not have found you on the web, tell us a little bit about Science of Parenthood.
Well, at Science of Parenthood, our job is to make parents laugh, because honestly, I don't know who needs to laugh.
It's either laugh
more.
Or cry on some days, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And we feel that it's far better to laugh at the stuff that really makes you want to curl up in a corner and sob. So what we do is we filter the parenting experience through a math and science lens. So my son had come home from school one day talking about Newton's laws of force and motion, and as he was explaining that an object at rest will remain at rest until acted on by an external force, it suddenly hit me that it sounded just like him with his video games. So I jumped up from the table, and I quickly wrote down Newton's first law of parenting: a child at rest will remain at rest until you need your iPad back.
So yeah.
So, and we have things like Pavlov's high chair, which is how your baby conditions you to pick up the toy every time he throws it to the floor and give it back to him. So we cover all of the topics that really make parents want to tear their hair out: picky eating, diaper blowouts, homework hassles, all of it.
These are scientific principles. Like this one I think is funny. A child will always sleep perpendicular to any adult sleeping next to them. That is very accurate.
Yes, that is a sleep geometry theorem, and any adult who's ever co-slept with a kid will know that the kid will always be perpendicular to you. You and your partner end up pushed to the edges of the bed while the kid stretches out between you. Never fails.
Of course. Now, you hit upon this as a parent. You've used your own experiences, and also your friends, I guess, tell you stories too.
Yes, we have a lot of people who pepper us with stories. One of my favorite was the mom who told us that she was hosting a play date. The other mom who brought her child over swore the kid was potty trained, and yet he was not. And he left her a very lovely gift on the carpet.
Oh, boy. I could email you a few of my own personal experiences, too, Noreen, if you like. I can contribute to the website if that is helpful at all. But you do have to laugh. I mean, just last night, my 11-year-old was sitting down to do her homework and had an end-of-day meltdown. And mm-hmm. all of her papers from her backpack, she just decided to throw them all over the room and, you know.
I have an 11-year-old as well, and homework hassles are one of the biggest things that drive my frustration. I actually wrote a version of the Serenity Prayer called the Mother's Homework Prayer after a night.
I'm not Catholic, but I could say that as a rosary myself. How did you even find the time to write this?
Well, that's what I do. I'm a writer.
But writing a book and writing magazine pieces are two different things. So kudos, first of all. On that, I mean that's a heavy lift to do a book.
It was fun though. This was the most fun writing I think I've ever had, and I have a phenomenal collaborator, my partner Jessica Ziegler, who did all of the cartoons in the book and all of the cartoons that I'll be showing during my show at the Jewish Community Alliance. And between the two of us, I mean, we just kept cracking each other up. We're constantly like brainstorming these ideas. She has a 12-year-old, and now my son is 11. So between the two of us, the book is about 110% autobiographical.
Sure. Now, there's an event coming up here in Jacksonville that you call Totally Babysitter Worthy. This is Thursday night at the JCA on San Jose Boulevard, the Jewish Community Alliance. You're going to help parents get a break from the kids, an adult evening of comedy and commiseration. What's going to be happening?
Well, it's like an author reading, but on steroids. So I do stand up, I tell funny stories, and I show slides from the book and from our website, and I read selections from the book. And basically, I'm there to make parents laugh about, you know, getting vomited on, you know, when you're ready to walk out the door to work. And
that happened to me once. Yeah, actually more than once now that I think about it.
I don't think you can call yourself a parent if you have not been vomited on at least once.
Oh, yeah. How about getting vomited on by one kid while you're breastfeeding the other kid? That happened to me once, too.
Oh, okay. You might have won that one right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was one for the books. For your book, it's Science of Parenthood. Now, you're going to be – come on out and see Noreen Dworkin McDaniel Thursday night, 6:30 p.m. at the JCA, the Jewish Community Alliance, Q&A, meet and greet, and book signing. Hope you enjoy your time here in Florida, Noreen, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And you can check out our website, Science of Parenthood, as well. And that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. Next on 1A, are airstrikes against the Islamic State working? The latest on the push to defeat ISIS. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.